Ready to dive deep into a Supreme Court case. This one is pretty wild. It deals with confessions, police procedure, and whether courts should look the other way when rules are broken, you know, even for a good cause.
Yeah, this case, McNabb v. United States, is really fascinating. It's not just about the crime itself, but delves into some weighty questions about the power of the Supreme Court. You know, specifically its power to ensure fairness in federal courts, even if it means like challenging law enforcement actions. It's about that balance.
Okay, so let's set the scene. We're talking 1943, the Tennessee Hills,
Yeah.
and the McNabb family is running their, well, moonshining operation when things go very, very wrong.
Right. Like picture it, a confrontation with federal agents, things escalate, there's a shootout, an officer ends up getting killed, it's intense. And then the McNabs find themselves under arrest, middle of the night. Talk about a recipe for a legal battle.
Okay, I am hooked. What happened after the arrest that made this case like so important, so groundbreaking?
Well, here's the thing. The McNabs, they were held and questioned for over 14 hours. 14 hours before ever being brought before a judge. And that's where things get legally dicey. Back then, there was a federal law in place. This law required prompt presentment, meaning anyone arrested had to see a judge quickly, like ASOP. But the officers in this case, well, they didn't exactly follow that rule.
Wait, so they just ignored the federal law? Why would they do that?
It's not hard to imagine the pressure they were under, right? I mean, they were dealing with the death of a fellow officer, but that decision, it had major repercussions. Not only were the McNabs questioned for a super long time without a lawyer present, but they were also sleep deprived. Talk about a recipe for, well, questionable confessions.
So, under that intense pressure, did they confess? And if they did, like legally speaking, does it even matter that they were held for so long?
You hit the nail on the head. They did confess. And those confessions, those became the prosecution's like slam dunk evidence. That's exactly why the procedural violation, that delay in getting them in front of a judge, became so critical to this whole case. It brings up a massive legal question. Are confessions admissible if they are obtained during, you know, an illegal detention? Can you use evidence that was gathered by breaking the rules? That's the core issue here.
Wow, that's a question with huge, huge GE implications. So, how did the Supreme Court handle this? Were they willing to overlook it? Or did they take a stand for fairness, for following the rules?
This is where Justice Felix Frankfurter, the dude who wrote the majority opinion, really shines. He was all about following the law, no matter what. He wasn't going to let this slide.
I've heard Frankfurter was, let's say, passionate about upholding legal procedures.
Oh, he was. In his opinion, he straight up wrote, "Courts cannot be accomplices in willful disobedience of law." Basically, he's saying the judicial system can't just ignore it when law enforcement breaks the rules, even if it means conviction. It's about the bigger picture. And that, my friend, brings us to one of the most interesting parts of this whole thing, the court's supervisory power.
Okay, supervisory power. Break that down for us. What does that even mean, you know, in this context?
It means the Supreme Court, they have the power, the authority to like oversee and regulate how federal courts operate. It even goes beyond what's written, like specifically spelled out in the Constitution. Frankfurter, he chose to base the McNabb decision on this power, and that was strategic. That was a deliberate move, and it has some big implications.
So he could have gone the constitutional route, but he decided on this supervisory power thing instead.
Yeah.
Why is that so significant?
Because it sends a message. A big one. It's about the Supreme Court's role in making sure things are fair in the federal system. Frankfurter wasn't just worried about the McNabb's rights. He was concerned about the whole judicial process, the integrity of it. He wanted to set a precedent. Courts won't tolerate shortcuts or rule bending, even in criminal cases. You got to play by the rules.
That's a bold move.
Yeah.
So he basically used this supervisory power to throw out the confessions and say, "Hey, procedural fairness, that's top priority."
Exactly. But wait, there's more. This decision, it didn't just impact the McNabs, it had ripple effects throughout the whole federal system. It led to what we call the McNabb-Mallory rule. Basically, this rule says that confessions obtained during an unnecessary delay in presenting someone to a judge, those are inadmissible in federal court. You can't use them.
So, because of what happened to the McNabs, there's now a rule that directly addresses this kind of procedural violation. That's a pretty big deal for a case about, you know, moonshining in Tennessee.
Oh, it is. It really shows how a single Supreme Court decision can change how justice is done in this country. But of course, not everyone was on board with Frankfurter's take. We have dissenting opinions in this case that bring up some really good counterpoints.
Oh, I bet. Anytime you have a ruling that shifts the balance of power, especially when it comes to law enforcement, people are going to have some strong opinions, right?
Totally. Justice Stanley Reed, the guy who wrote the main dissent, he felt the court was going a bit too far, focusing too much on this procedural thing. He argued that the focus should be on whether a confession was truly coerced, not just whether there was a delay.
So he thought they were getting caught up in the technicalities and maybe even letting guilty people get away with it. That's a compelling argument.
It is, and it gets at this tension that always exists between ensuring fairness and actually enforcing the law. Should courts be able to exclude evidence, even if it means someone who might be guilty might go free?
That's a question with no easy answers. It seems like this McNabb case really gets to the heart of that dilemma.
It absolutely does. That's why it's such a fascinating case to study, right? It's not just about some moonshiners. It's about those fundamental principles of justice and how we balance competing interests in our legal system.
We've got a dramatic arrest, a controversial interrogation, and a Supreme Court decision that really shook things up. What happened next? Did the McNabbs get a new trial, you know, without those confessions in the picture? And what about the impact of this McNabb-Mallory rule? Did it actually change how federal cases are handled?
Those are all great questions, and we'll dive into them in the next part of our deep dive.
So we left off with the Supreme Court tossing those confessions and, you know, setting up that McNabb-Mallory rule.
Yeah.
What happened to the McNabbs after that? I mean, did they get a new trial without those confessions hanging over their heads?
Yeah, they did get retried, but it wasn't exactly smooth sailing for the prosecution. You got to remember, those confessions were their strongest evidence. Without them, they had to lean on circumstantial evidence and eyewitness testimony, which, to be honest, was kind of shaky from the start.
I can imagine that made things pretty tough for the prosecution. Did they manage to get a conviction, you know, without those confessions?
Well, get this. The first retrial actually ended in a hung jury. That really tells you something about how important those confessions were. It wasn't until the second retrial that the government actually got a conviction.
Wow, a hung jury. That's wild. Yeah. So what was the outcome of that second retrial? Were they convicted of the same charges as before?
Not quite. This time, instead of second-degree murder, they were convicted of, well, conspiracy to violate federal liquor laws, and their sentences. Way shorter compared to what they would have faced if they were found guilty on those original murder charges.
That is a huge difference.
Yeah.
It shows how the McNabb decision and throwing out those confessions really had a tangible impact on the case. But let's step back for a second and talk about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
What lasting effects did the McNabb decision have on, you know, the legal world beyond this one case?
Well, McNabb had a ripple effect, you know, throughout the federal courts. It set a big precedent about how important due process is. The McNabb-Mallory rule, the one that came from this case, it became a major safeguard against, like, those coercive interrogation tactics. It basically told law enforcement, hey, you can't just hold someone forever without letting them see a judge.
So it really made that prompt presentment requirement, the one that was already supposed to be there, well, it made it official, made it something they couldn't ignore. It sounds like this rule tackled the problem head on, the problem that was at the heart of the McNabb case.
Exactly. It's a great example of how the courts can use their power to enforce those procedural safeguards and keep law enforcement in check. But, and there's always a but, the story doesn't end there. The McNabb-Mallory rule actually faced some pushback later on.
Really? I'm surprised. What happened? Did they try to get rid of the whole rule altogether?
In 1968, Congress passed a law that tried to, let's say, weaken the McNabb-Mallory rule. This new law basically said confessions should be admissible as long as they were voluntary, no matter how long someone was held before seeing a judge. It was like they were shifting the focus away from those procedural things and back to, you know, was the confession actually coerced or not?
So it sounds like Congress was trying to find a different balance, right? Between protecting individual rights and making sure law enforcement could do their jobs effectively. That tension we talked about earlier, it's always there, isn't it?
You got it. That tension is woven right into our legal system. But here's the key. Even though Congress tried to change McNabb-Mallory, that core principle, protecting people from unfair questioning, that stayed strong. It remained a cornerstone of our legal system.
That's really interesting. It's like McNabb planted a seed, and even though they tried to cut it back, the main idea, it kept growing and influencing other parts of the law.
You said it. And maybe the most striking example of that influence is the development of the Miranda warnings.
Ah, Miranda. You have the right to remain silent. Those warnings are, like, part of our culture now. What's the connection between McNabb and Miranda?
McNabb laid the groundwork for Miranda by establishing this idea that courts have a duty to protect individuals from coercive interrogation. It showed that the Supreme Court was willing to step in to exclude evidence, even confessions, if they were obtained the wrong way. And that created the foundation for Miranda, which went further by requiring law enforcement to tell suspects about their rights before questioning them.
So even though they changed the McNabb-Mallory rule itself, the main idea behind it, protecting people from unfair interrogation, that idea stuck around and influenced one of the most well-known legal protections we have today.
Exactly. McNabb was a landmark case, not just because of the specific rule it created, but because it highlighted the power of the Supreme Court to be a guardian of fairness and due process. It showed that the court was willing to hold law enforcement accountable, even if it meant overturning convictions.
And this supervisory power of the court that you mentioned, that played a big role in all of this, right? It seems like McNabb really solidified the court's authority to intervene and make sure the federal courts are operating fairly and ethically.
Absolutely. It's a powerful tool that the Supreme Court can use to shape how justice is done, and McNabb is a perfect example of that power in action.
This is also fascinating. It's amazing how a case about some moonshiners from Tennessee could have such a lasting impact on the entire legal system.
It really shows how powerful legal precedent is and how one Supreme Court decision can create a ripple effect. And McNabb, with its focus on due process and the limits of police power, it's still relevant today, still a case that gets people thinking and talking.
Speaking of thinking and talking, I'm curious to hear more about those dissenting opinions. I'm sure there were some strong arguments against the majority's approach in McNabb. What were some of the main concerns the dissenting justices had?
Well, as we dig into those dissenting opinions, it's important to remember that the Supreme Court isn't just one big voice, right? It's 9 justices, each with their own legal perspective and how they interpret the law. And in McNabb, we see a clear division, a split between those who put procedural fairness above everything else and those who felt that sometimes getting to justice meant being a little more flexible.
All right, so let's get into those dissenting opinions. What were those justices, the ones who disagreed, what were their main concerns about the majority's ruling, the ruling in McNabb?
Well, Justice Reed, the one who wrote the main dissent, he felt like the court was, you know, setting a dangerous precedent, like putting too much emphasis on a technicality, a procedural one. He argued that they should be focusing on whether a confession was really coerced, not just if there was a delay in bringing the person to a judge.
So he was worried that this ruling would make it harder for law enforcement, you know, tie their hands and make it tough to get confessions, even in cases where there was no real pressure or coercion.
Exactly. He thought the court was going too far and that it might end up letting some guilty people walk free, all in the name of protecting this procedural rule. He thought those McNabb confessions seemed voluntary, like they were given freely, no undue pressure. So to him, excluding them just because of the delay, that was going too far.
Yeah, that brings up that big question, right? How do you balance those competing interests in the justice system? How much weight should you give to procedural rules when you're also trying to hold criminals accountable? It sounds like Justice Reed felt they were leaning too hard on the procedural safeguards.
Right. He saw this decision as potentially, you know, opening the floodgates. Like, suddenly you could challenge confessions based on any little technicality, even if someone's rights weren't really violated. He worried that criminals could use this to their advantage, you know, find a loophole and avoid justice.
That's a valid point. It sounds like he wanted a more nuanced approach, something that looked at each case individually instead of relying on a strict rule. Almost like the ends justify the means, at least to a certain extent.
I think that's a good way to put it. He thought they should have focused on whether the confessions were actually coerced, you know, the substance of it, not get hung up on a technicality. And this debate, like we've seen in our deep dive, it's still going on today. It's about how we define justice, what trade-offs we're willing to make to achieve it.
This whole conversation has been so interesting. It makes you think about how complicated the legal system is, all the challenges of balancing individual rights with, you know, keeping the public safe. What strikes me is how this McNabb case, even though it happened so long ago, it still sparks debate today. It's influencing legal thinking. It shows you the lasting power of these precedents, you know, how one Supreme Court decision can ripple outward.
I totally agree. McNabb v. United States is more than just some old case. It's like a snapshot of our criminal justice system, how it's evolved, and this constant struggle to balance these different values. It reminds us that there aren't always easy answers when you're dealing with these tough legal questions.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We talked about everything, you know, the dramatic events of the case, the Supreme Court's decision and their logic behind it, what happened to the McNabs afterward, and then the wider impact of the McNab-Mallory rule and that whole supervisory power thing. We even looked at those dissenting opinions, those arguments from the other side, and the questions they raise about what justice really means.
It's been quite a journey. And I hope you, our listener, you've come away with a better understanding of McNab v. United States and why it matters, you know, even today. It's a case that makes you think about those core issues of due process, the limits of police power, and how we walk that line between individual rights and keeping everyone safe.
It's been a real eye-opener, that's for sure. And we hope you'll keep digging into these issues. You know, read the whole McNab opinion, check out those dissenting opinions, think about those questions we've talked about today. How do we ensure fairness in our system? How do we handle that tension between individual rights and achieving justice? These are important questions, and they deserve our attention, our careful thought.
Thanks for being with us on this deep dive. And until next time, keep those legal minds working and never stop questioning the world around you.